On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. We got Get a Grip coming your way in about 60 minutes, but as we continue to break down the possibilities of a Cavs offseason, we head out to the Wise Heart Right. We Make It Right. Call Kyle Wright Hotline. You can find all his work over there at cleveland.com. Our good friend Ethan Sands joining us now. Ethan, what's going on?
What's going on, buddy? How you doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good. Obviously, a lot of things floating around. So social media has been my phone just blows up every 3 seconds, and I got Ja going to Portland. I got people bouncing around. I mean, this is kind of the at least fun part of the off season, right?
I think it's the most fun, right? Because everything changes. Everything where we get to see how the NBA, not just the Eastern Conference, is going to be reconstructed, is going to be restructured after this offseason. So I think it'll be interesting. We've had a lot of decent moves already, and now it's time to see if the Cleveland Cavaliers can match it, make it, or break it.
I want to ask you about something away from Cleveland really quick to start things off. Golden State's trying to build like a decade too old core four between Steph, maybe Draymond, LeBron, and then AD is a package deal. What should be kind of the initial reaction if LeBron goes to Golden State and that ends up being the core four?
The initial reaction for Cavs fans is, what are you doing? Like, I honestly think when you think about all that went down between Golden State and Cleveland over those years where the Cavaliers were going to the NBA Finals consecutively, was that was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, rivalry in the NBA. And now you're telling me that you're going to end your career alongside the guy that prevented you from bringing back multiple championships to the city that you grew up in and love and all these other things. But the other thing is, for basketball fans, you want to see what they're capable of. We've understood that they played alongside one another in the Olympics for Team USA and all these things and how great they were as a pairing. But alongside Anthony Davis, then you throw in some other ancillary pieces. I think it's interesting for the NBA, not to say that they're going to be competing with San Antonio and OKC and all of the like, but I do think that although they are older, although they still are trying to prove that they have basketball left to be played, this is a situation where basketball could be better for it because we don't know what it's going to look like and have never seen a core four built around this age of and caliber of players as well.
People talk about the fact that this, they say it damages LeBron, his legacy. Does that in any way you think hold any truth to it?
I don't think it damages his legacy. He's still going to be considered one of the best players to ever touch a basketball. You really can't take that away from him based on the team that he plays for. And obviously you can't take away the championships, the MVPs, all the accolades that he has. So I think this would just be another chapter in his story. Would you rather him end his career being a Cleveland Cavalier? Sure, storybook. But also I think there's a villain aspect to it that could also be plugged and played into the end of his story as well. So I just think it's interesting. I don't really have a biased take on it from either perspective, to be honest with you.
Do you think the Cavs fan have to give up sort of any hope that they have of LeBron and the idea of a homecoming, or is that still alive to you?
I think they're still alive, right? It's never say never until any deal is officially done. And obviously him being in Cleveland this past weekend definitely helps that narrative, him driving around, him being at golf courses, becoming members at golf courses. That all helps the narrative of him potentially coming back to Cleveland. But also we understand how difficult it would be for the Cleveland Cavaliers to acquire LeBron James, potentially through sign and trade, potentially through giving up Jared Allen and all these other things. But I think there is a possibility that it can still happen. We cannot be sure until anything is finalized.
All right, we saw James Harden today decline his player option. It was the expected move. The expectation is a multi-year deal where he takes a little bit less money. I don't know how many Cavs fans are really happy with James Harden right now. Is this a move that you think should have people kind of changing their opinions, not necessarily on him as a player, but the way that he fits onto the team in the roster now?
I think you understand that there are few players around the NBA that can do what James Harden does at his caliber, at his veteran experience, having seen as much as he has around the NBA throughout his tenure throughout the league. I think it's important to remember that although he'll be 36, 37 years old next year, he is still one of the best point guards in the league based on his ability to score the basketball, ability to pass the basketball, ability to manipulate defenses, and the geometry of the floor. There's all these pieces that aren't being taken into account for Cavs fans. And I think there's an understanding, sure, he's getting older. Should you want a younger core? Yes. Do you want someone to build around for the future? Why are you putting all eggs into this next year? It's all understandable. But you also have to view it from the point of, who else would you replace him with? And who else is going to do what James Harden can do, especially when it comes to alleviating pressure from Donovan Mitchell and not being an undersized guard? Because, of course, James Harden is 6'5", and the Cavs have been playing with an undersized backcourt for a majority of the tenure of Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland. So having James Harden also helps in that aspect as well. So I think it's important to keep an eye on what James Harden, what version of James Harden the Cavs are going to get, and how his summer looks throughout playing more time with Donovan Mitchell throughout the summer, training camp, and all these things. But James Harden, although 36, 37, is going to be a critical piece for this Cleveland Cavaliers team coming into this next season.
And again, Ethan Sands with us on the hotline. Ethan, back on that. I mean, James Harden, obviously, not a ton of games here played in the regular season. The playoffs did not go the way that Cavs fans were hoping they did. How much of that is just the severe lack of time that this team played together in? And do you think that there is a massive step forward that James Harden can still take with the Cavs?
I think we have to recognize that there has been one team since the NBA-ABA merger that has made a significant trade for an all-NBA caliber team at the trade deadline that ended up winning the championship that same year. One since the NBA-ABA merger, right? So understanding that James Harden coming into the new system with Kenny Atkinson, and sure, the Cavs wanted to say that they didn't have to change their system around James Harden. That wasn't true, right? We saw how their pace of play drastically changed when James Harden came to the roster. They were better off in the playoffs with James Harden as well. Sure, he didn't have a great series against the New York Knicks, but I agree with Kenny Atkinson and the organization that the Cavs might have struggled to get past the Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons should James Harden not have been on the roster at all as well, because of his size, because of his passing ability and scoring ability and all these things that we've talked about already. But I do think that James Harden doesn't necessarily have a new level to get to for him, but he has a better understanding of the roster around him and a better, and they, those players around him, have a better understanding of his game and how they can be beneficial. Plus, understanding what version offensively that Kenny Atkinson and that core roster pieces work best at, like when they're in motion rather than being stagnant and waiting till 5 or 7 seconds are left on the shot clock to initiate an offensive sequence with James Harden handling the ball. So alleviating and helping Max Strus and Sam Merrill still be able to move off the ball, cutting, screening, all these things, that was harder because they were changing their system to help James Harden fit in better. Now they have this entire offseason to help themselves recognize what version of themselves offensively is best and how they can get everybody into the best situations for success for this Cavs roster.
Ethan, you mentioned Max Strus. Obviously, Cavs need to get under the second apron this year, have to face the multitude of penalties that come around with being a second-year, second-apron team. Max Strus, obviously a relatively large contract for one of the role players. Do you see a way they stay under the apron and keep him on the roster?
It's difficult to say, right? Because he is such a big piece to the emotional lead.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
leadership of this group. And obviously, Kenny Atkinson loves having him as one of his key pieces, whether that's as in the starting unit or off the bench. He's seen winning plays from Max Strus. Also, I think we have to remember that Max Strus missed the first 67 games of last season and still had an impact in the postseason and all these things. But when you're talking about the financial restrictions that the Cavs have to deal with, Max Strus is one of the guys that we've heard that the Cleveland Cavaliers are trying to figure out if he's best suited as a piece in a trade, or if they can keep him on the roster and make moves around the margins to get under that second apron. Because as you mentioned, there are so many penalties and restrictions that come with being a second-year, second-apron team. So whether or not they keep Dennis Schroeder, Keon Ellis, Dean Wade, those are other players that are also on the margins of helping them get under that second apron, and as well as James Harden taking less money over the next 2 to 3 years, whatever the multi-year deal will end up being, is extremely important for doing so as well.
Are you looking at a potential addition? The Atlanta Hawks declined Jonathan Kuminga's 24 and change million dollar team option, making him a free agent. There's rumors floating around. Cavs are showing maybe a little bit of interest. Is that a player that should get fans excited?
I think he is, right? Because as you look at it, and I mentioned Dean Wade there recently, Dean Wade is the only wing-size player that the Cavs have over 6'6", which if you were to add Jonathan Kuminga, he would be the other one, right? Naquan Tomlin still trying to come into his own. But when you look at the statistics of what Jonathan Kuminga has been able to do, a career 33.2% three-point shooter on 2.4 attempts per game, 50% from the field, but also the defensive end of the floor. That's what the Cavs have been missing and trying to find, a two-way wing that is capable of defending an opposing team's best player while also having more production on the offensive end of the floor. Does he move the needle for me the same way that some of these other free agents or some of these other bigger trades would have? I'm going to say no, but there's always the hope that a new player can invigorate something different that the Cavs have been lacking and have needed in their chase for a championship.
All right, Ethan, I mean, one of the major, I'm not alone in this, but one of the major things that I've picked on when it comes to Kobe Altman's roster building is that it seems like a lot of the players he brings in, there's overlap. Like Max Strus, Sam Merrill, Keon Ellis feel to have a very similar role on the floor. Is it necessary for Kobe to kind of diversify the way that the roster looks and get a lot more players who maybe don't have as many overlapping skill sets in this offseason?
I can say that there's a necessity for that, right? And I can be in agreement with you, but whether or not Kobe Altman actually does it is completely up to the front office, right? We continue to have this conversation about the guard room and the guard depth that the Cavs have. You can talk about Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus, Sam Merrill, Malik Thomas. You can talk about Jalen Tyson. You have Tyrese Proctor, Craig Porter Jr. There is a lengthy list of guards that are going to be battling it out for these second and third positions behind James Harden and Donovan Mitchell as well. And it's difficult to say why the Cavs continue to draft for best player available, or rather than fit, obviously 34th in the draft is difficult to find fit, but there was front court depth there. And we also understand that Thomas Bryant is coming back on a 1-year veteran minimum deal again, but what is he bringing of value other than just saying you have some kind of backcourt or front court depth, excuse me, because we know he only played in 9 of 18 playoff games while playing in 60 regular season games. So if you're not going to trust a player that you deemed one of the best offseason acquisitions last year to play in the postseason, then why is he coming back and what value does he truly have? I like Thomas Bryant's game, but whether or not the front office and Kenny Atkinson are going to utilize him in the postseason is a different story, as well as why they have such a depleted wing depth room when relying on undersized wings such as Keon Ellis, Max Strus, and the like of those players. We understand that they need more of those and a bigger size of those to kind of battle it out in the Eastern Conference, especially against teams like Boston, Atlanta, you name it. There are teams that are going to be difficult for them to play against, especially the New York Knicks, as we saw in that 4-game series in the Eastern Conference Finals, for them to get to a different level. And yet the Cavs continuously fail to acquire or draft players of that size or that ilk.
And again, Ethan Sands with us on the hotline. All right, Ethan, you mentioned it. I mean, it's one thing for us to say it. It's another for Kobe to go out and do it. I mean, Do we feel like this is a changed Kobe Altman, or hey, do you have a feeling more of this offseason that it is going to be a lot of the same roster back and, I mean, a lot of the same problems that the Cavs have run into in the past?
As of right now, I have a feeling that the Cavs are trying to get stuff down, trying to get stuff done, but obviously there are other teams in the works and trying to also get their wishes met, right? And I'm not saying that Kobe Altman's on the hot seat. I believe Kobe Altman has built up equity throughout the organization with Dan Gilbert as well, and having been one of the only president of basketball operations to get multiple extended contracts within the organization, that is held true. But the understanding is this Cavs roster is not built to win a championship in a year that you have championship expectations. So you need to make moves. You need to make larger moves, and you might miss out on two of the biggest fish that could ever be on the market in Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's already on his way to Miami, and Jaylen Brown, as he's in the likes for being traded from the Boston Celtics as well. So although you might have an attachment to some of these players that you might have drafted, you might have an attachment to the future of this roster, the future of this team, if you're on the timeline of Donovan Mitchell, which I believe this Cavs team still is, you have one more year of a guaranteed contract before Donovan Mitchell has the potential to walk freely without getting anything in return. So you have to go all in this season, all or nothing this season. And yes, that means championship or bust this season.
Ethan, how many players on this team should be untouchable this offseason?
None, to be honest with you. And in my opinion, none of them should be untouchable, but that's not how the organization sees it.
I mean, obviously that includes Donovan. Is this, when we talk about Jaylen Brown, obviously a name we just mentioned, I mean, would you have a preference to, if you were able to bring him in, if it turned out to be, it either took Evan or Donovan, would you have a preference in which way to go?
My preference would be you would be able to give up Donovan Mitchell for Jaylen Brown. But the point of why Jaylen Brown would be being traded is the Cavs would not, the Boston Celtics would not want Donovan Mitchell in return. They would want Evan Mobley, right? And the Cavs would want to pair Jaylen Brown with Donovan Mitchell and all these things. So the only pathway forward for the Cavs to acquire Jaylen Brown is by giving up Evan Mobley. And I do not know if this organization is willing or ready to part ways with Evan Mobley, particularly knowing that he's their safety net going into the potential Donovan Mitchell-less Cavaliers organization franchise that is potentially coming in the next few years.
All right, Ethan, have you identified, maybe more on the margins, aligned with the way that the Cavs are thinking right now, players that have kind of been floated around, a couple of guys declining options today, anybody that stands out to you that the Cavs should be targeting?
I think the free agent market is going to be interesting, right? Because of all these players that are getting declined, because of all these players that are in the free agent market. But I'm not sure that the Cavs have enough that would entice these even free agent guys looking for just a bare minimum contract to continue their sentence in the league. But also understanding that they have to have money in reserve to ensure that they bring Dean Wade back, right? Or ensure that they can get Keon Ellis back and all these other things. So the Cavs need to make their own moves first and determine who is coming back before they can entirely put their eggs into the basket of going and getting players on the free agent market. And again, I've mentioned that the Cavs have now, with James Harden potentially re-signing a new contract, with Thomas Bryant coming back, and then Malik Thomas likely to sign a standard NBA deal, the Cavs basically have one slot left of their 15, because they usually save that 15th slot for later into the season based on whether that's they bring up a two-way contract, whether that's they make someone in the buyout market, all these things. So understanding that they are also very short on roster positioning, that it would be hard to say that they make one move in the free agent market and that would make them exponentially better, right? Because you're on the free agent market for a reason. So I do think that there are some interesting and intriguing pieces that have been declined, as we talked about with Jonathan Kuminga, but also understanding that one move might not be the answer unless the Cavs are willing to make one of these heftier trades that we talked about on this show.
All right, Ethan, you gave us a lot to think about. You know, I always appreciate you setting aside the time and giving us some Cavs to talk about throughout this offseason. So I appreciate you a ton and look forward to talking to you as the offseason rolls on.
Thank you, Jake. I appreciate you having me on. Look forward to talking to you more soon.
Yep, no doubt. Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com, with us there on the Why Start Right, We Make It Right. Cole, Kyle Wright hotline. We'll react to what he had to say. And as we take a look into the James Harden decline of his player option, is him taking less money enough to make you change your opinion on him at all? That's coming your way in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.